Good morning and welcome to today's Albany Report. I'm your host, former State Senator Cecilia Kacik. It's been a rough week for the governor. He's had some highs and lows, but I'm sure he's hurting from the recent Siena poll. So I'm being joined by Bruce Jury, who's a longtime political consultant, lawyer, works for a law firm in Albany called Manat, Phelps & Phillips, and has been a consultant to three governors and has a lot of history with government and how Albany works. And I'm thrilled that you could join us today and help us kind of take a look at the Siena Research poll results and what this means for the governor and the way Albany functions. So thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So my takeaway was this was not a good poll for the governor. And we'll remind our listeners, the Siena poll is done on a monthly basis, and they poll the governor's favorability. And this was the first time that the governor's favorability rating dropped below 50% since he became governor. And this has been a trend. This is not just a sudden thing. It's been a bit of a slide. What is this poll telling the governor?
I think the poll is telling the governor that he's currently being affected by what hits most governors in the second term, and that is that they have a slow diminution of public support, and that what they have to do is they have to find ways to refresh or compensate for that. One might almost call it the way a basketball player or a tennis player gets a second wind. And I think there's three things that are at root in this poll, but I want to make sure you're hearing me.
Yeah, I think we're hearing you loud and clear.
Okay, great. First, he had been suffering early on. His high poll ratings were a function of he had unity from Democratic and independent voters and historically strong support from Republicans. And when he took the position he did on the SAFE Act, he lost a lot of that Republican support. Early in his term, the Republicans liked that he, a broad cross-section of Republicans, liked that he was getting Albany working, he was holding spending down, and quite frankly, there were no major Republicans on the scene that they could root for against him. So that, I don't want to say it artificially inflated his polling ratings, but it gave him a boost. So we got used to very high polling ratings.
How high were his ratings?
His highest ratings, his highest rating was 77% back in February of 2011. That was when he first came in. It in January of 15, so that's not too long ago. That's six months ago. It was at 60%.
Right. So that clearly included a number of Republicans.
Clearly, yes. So that fell off with the SAFE Act. Then he made, I think, a major miscalculation on education. And I think his approach on it, he made the same mistake, funny enough, Alphonse D'Amato made in 1998 against Chuck Schumer. So it's people of different parties. In New York, when you attack teachers' unions, it comes across as anti-teacher. And when you come across as anti-teacher, you come across as anti-public education. And what happened, the governor got himself in a box where he came across not as I'm trying to craft a fair teacher evaluation system, but he came across as attacking teachers and hence public education. So that led to a drain on his Democratic side, particularly amongst female voters and liberal female voters and suburban voters upstate as well as downstate. So what you're seeing now is losing from both ends of the ideological spectrum. A third drain came from the corruption scandal. And even though there's been no evidence of any corruption by the governor or anybody working for him, governors are like NFL quarterbacks. When the team wins, they get more credit than they deserve. When the team loses, they get more blame, even if they threw the ball pretty well that Sunday. And when there's a corruption scandal, to make it a different analogy, it's like father knows best. I don't mean to be chauvinistic, but you know the father or the governor of the state gets more blame when things are going poorly. And when both leaders go down, both the legislative yep. leaders in the Assembly and the Senate, that leaches into the governor's ratings. I'm almost surprised his numbers are not lower than they are, especially when I compare him to where Governor Malloy is in Connecticut, where Governor Christie is in New Jersey, and they're far lower than he is. So the question is, where is he now, but where does he go from here?
Right. Well, it can certainly continue to go down. And one of the reasons that people look to the governor is he's the leader. And
yeah.
I think on the election, on ethics reform, campaign finance reform, he really has not been a strong leader, some would say. I mean, after Speaker Silver was arrested and indicted, the very next day or after the arrest, he came out with, we've got to have ethics reform and we're going to do it. And then it kind of petered out and they really did not put in strong changes in campaign finance reform or ethics reform. They kind of like, you know, fiddled around the edges a little bit. Provide a little more transparency.
I would quibble with that. I think on campaign finance reform, you're absolutely right. I think in terms of outside income, they did a much better job than they're getting credit for, but I think they failed in the political messaging because they allowed the media, who wanted a complete, total disclosure, to come in, and the legislature was not willing to grant that. But I agree with you. You need to keep going at it. And I think one of the things that the governor needs to develop is a sustained approach on some of these issues. So first, I'd say a strategic retreat on education so he makes clear he's pro-public education and not anti-education, and not allow the public to see his critiques of the teachers' unions be anti-public education. And I think his rhetoric, he has to change his rhetoric for that to happen. I agree with your point wholeheartedly. Keep banging away at the LLC reform and some of the other campaign finance reforms that, quite frankly, your voice has been one of the most vibrant in the entire state since your entrance as a candidate back in 2008. And I think also jobs and job development. I think one of the things the governor fell into is the media's perception that all he cared about was Western New York. I think as they lay out these grants for these three pots of $500 million, 1.5, competetive grants,
right.
Three regions of upstate will get $500 million each to promote economic development. Many in the legislature called that the Hunger Games.
Right.
Well, once you called it the Hunger Games, you weren't going to look very popular. But now, if when they lay out both that competition, that peer-reviewed competition for those three sites, plus if the tradition or if the earlier regional economic development grants result in a lot of different areas of upstate feel they're getting as they roll out those announcements, you may have a very different coloration on how the governor and his administration are viewed. That's an opportunity for a comeback.
Well, one of the, also we'll see some casinos get developed. I know in Schenectady, they had a job fair. They're going to hire 1,200 people. So as those get developed and those jobs will be created, do you think he'll get the credit for those?
I think yes, but I think the casinos will not be like an instant gratification in terms of public opinion. I think that will be, we'll look back and where are we at year two, year three, year five, year 10. But the combination, if people are getting hired and there are stories and people talking about it, that will clearly help them.
Well, one of the things that I think troubled people is the way the governor went about talking about education and trying to push changes in education policy through the budget process. And rather than getting thoughtful policy out there and debated and discussed, and, no one ends up happy, but do we really get policy changes that improve education throughout the state? And the effect of money driving the policy agenda through the enormous influence by funders to try to push through this education investment tax credit proposal, which the Assembly ended up not allowing through their House. It smacks to me that the governor was more interested in placating funders and beating up the unions rather than really looking at sound education policy. And I think that's one of the reasons why the governor's education...
I'm a little less critical of him on that than you, although I think he hurt himself with the way he did it. I think he was honestly trying to help private and parochial schools that have been bleeding. I think the public debate made it seem as if the charter schools and the Catholic schools were in the same place. And in reality, the charter schools have wound up hurting the Catholic schools because they've pulled a lot of the enrollment out of the Catholic schools. The Catholic schools have had a strong record of accomplishment, particularly in inner city areas and funny enough, amongst a lot of non-Catholic minority children. But your characterization of the debate is how it came across, and I think the governor would be wise to really come across as you suggest, interested in strong public policy. I thought that his frustration with not being able to reach agreement with the teachers' unions around the evaluation issue led him to rhetorical excess, which turned into a mistake for him. And I agree with you. I think a more a more thoughtful, a less caustic debate on public education on all sides, leading towards what would be best for our children and grandchildren. And I say grandchildren because I'm reflecting my being a lot older than the rest of you, would be a good thing for the state.
Well, we have a new education commissioner. So if you were advising the governor today, what would you say to him?
I would say even though he did not select her and that she's selected by the Board of Regents, she seems to be coming at this with both an open hand and an open ear to all the stakeholders, talking to everyone. That was her record in Florida, and I'd say give her a chance to get that constructive dialogue up and going and take advantage of it. Any governor would benefit from an education commissioner who is bringing all the interested parties together in a constructive debate, and everybody seems to want to talk to her and win her ear and take advantage of that open hand that she's held out. And I would say let her do that. Take advantage of it and play off it so that you're seen as constructive in that regard and not resisting it.
Right.
And even though you didn't pick her, don't view that as a negative. View it as if she's a constructive force, that's a good thing for you overall.
Sure. Well, it's certainly not... We're certainly going to hear more about education as the political season heats up next year. What do you think? How do you think Common Core is going to end up? I mean, Common Core was a separate political line in the last election cycle. Do you see that as being continuing to be a political line and people voting on that line?
I think people have, I think the key to the Common Core, I think unfortunately Common Core became conflated. Common Core meaning the standards and the bringing in of higher standards to education became conflated with student testing and teacher evaluation.
Right.
And in the best of all worlds, we would have been able to bring in the Common Core standards and take both the student testing and the teacher evaluations on a bit of a slower course. And because of the pressure to comply with Race to the Top applications, which is federal funding, everything got conflated and it became both logistically difficult and politically toxic.
I think a lot of the legitimate concerns were how it was implemented. You know,
But I think what you're seeing in the polling data is the recognition that we don't want to turn away from standards, so I don't see the Common Core being repealed. And I think particularly if Commissioner Elia, the new education commissioner, can get a more constructive dialogue around how we actually implement teacher evaluations and what we do with testing. For instance, there was a lot of opposition to the private entity, Pearson. There's a corporate entity that was doing the crafting these student tests. Now there's a new testing entity. Maybe a little bit of, you know, a half a step, you know, taking a breath. Maybe we can get a more constructive dialogue. But I think over time, it will be revealed that the Common Core standards were a good thing. And the question is how to best get a testing system that doesn't overtest our kids and that doesn't turn the entire education regimen too much toward the test results rather than towards the best education for our students, and letting them take advantage of music and extracurricular opportunities and not just teaching to the test, and then having teachers fairly evaluated. For instance, my own sense is, you know, there was a great football coach, Bill Parcells. Most yep. people say his best year was the year his starting quarterback, Vinny Testaverde, with the Jets went down the first game with an Achilles injury, and he got the Jets to 8-8. That wasn't the year he looked the best mm-hmm. in the standards, but it was right. probably the year he did the best. And maybe I'm reflecting the fact that my mother was a teacher, my wife once taught, and my daughter's a teacher. But a lot of it depends on the kinds of students you get. Now, we would want, I think, the best teachers to get the toughest classes, meaning the kids who need the most help. If you just make evaluation about the student tests, then you're creating a disincentive for teachers to take the harder cases, the harder classes, the harder students. And I think a fair system that actually finds a way to, and student testing has to be a part of that, but it shouldn't be only that. And perhaps we can build in, and I'm not an educational expert by any means, and I'm probably swimming outside my lane, but find a way to judge how the teacher took the students where they were that year in September and where they ended up in June, rather than an artificial standard of where we hope they would be. So you were actually judging the kind of teaching job that they did.
Right.
And hopefully over time we can get that right.
Yes, I definitely agree with you on that. And it's reflected in the poll. I mean, education is complicated. The governor only received 24% thought he was doing an excellent or good job in improving the quality of public education. 73% gave him a fair or poor rating.
Yep.
That's really bad.
Yep, that is really bad, and it's particularly bad for a Democrat, because when you look at the cross-section of who tends to vote for Democrats and the fact that Democrats need to prevail in three gaps to do well in states like New York. One is the gender gap. They've done very well amongst female voters. Republicans in New York have not cracked a third of the female vote in over a decade. The fact that on the race gap, as minority voters, the aggregate of Black, Hispanic, and Asian, and multiracial voters is growing towards a full third of the state's electorate. Democrats have carried them by margins of 4-1 and better. And the emerging climate change gap. Now, education doesn't necessarily relate to climate change, but in terms of the gender gap and the race gap, education issues are a fundamental driver of the attitudes of both female and minority voters. Female voters, particularly because as either mothers or grandmothers, they tend to have a great concern as well as great knowledge of how education issues are affecting their children and grandchildren.
Yep,
men can sometimes get more interested in where the Yankees and the Red Sox are and ought to focus a little more on education.
Well, he's got a lot of ground to make up in there. The poll also looked at how people feel he's balancing the needs of both upstate and downstate. 25% of the people polled
yes.
gave him an excellent or good rating. 66% gave him a fair or poor, in this sense, a negative
yep.
rating on how he's balancing the needs of upstate and downstate. And I think the SAFE Act has a lot to do with it. And this last week, I think this memorandum of understanding came out after the poll was done, if I'm not mistaken.
I agree with you on the SAFE Act being the way they did the MOU was a mistake, but I think the balancing needs of upstate and downstate is less anything he's done wrong than a tale from the campaign you went through, where the Senate Republicans spent an awful lot of media buying power telling people Democrats wouldn't be fair to upstate. And I think that was, I think that if he gets the economic development agenda right, comes out of education, gets to a better place in education, he'll ameliorate a great deal of that. And the SAFE Act is a part of it. But they do not go blameless. I thought the MOU, the two-way MOU, was a mistake. But I think it is also a talisman of the fact that the two houses, the Assembly and the Senate, with all the rigmarole going around and discombobulation from losing the two leaders, basically the budget was quilted together as a series of two-way agreements between the governor and the Assembly on one hand, the governor and the Senate on the other, and then they quilted together where the budget. And I think they get into mistakes. And we may be reaching a point where the dysfunction that had plagued Albany for the decade before Cuomo came in as governor in January of 2011 may be recurring because the two houses can't get together. And that impacts that. And I think they just made a mistake on that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to ask you a question. Do you think doing the MOU was a reaction to trying to placate upstate voters?
Yeah. I think there was a pragmatic realization that there was a lot of feeling, although statewide, the DREAM Act has been supported by, on an average, 60% of New York State voters support the SAFE Act. But upstate, it's been a concern. So I think he was trying to say, okay, if there's a way we can be reasonable and do certain things here, but the way to have, I would have advised if I were asked, and I wasn't, only do that if you could get a three-way agreement. By the way, this would have been a great thing to accomplish as a three-way agreement, especially in a special session, especially if you could have found that sweet spot in the polling data on minimum wage, which may have gone a long way towards opening the Assembly's ears to being willing to do something on the SAFE Act. Sorry to keep making that mistake. that was a reasonable compromise on something that didn't vitiate the act as a whole, but said to gun owners, hey, we're listening to you on some of these logistical concerns. I'm amazed that given how popular the minimum wage is, particularly amongst blue-collar, socially conservative, older, white Catholic voters upstate, that the Senate Republicans have not moved off the dime on that. I think they will have to if they hope to win seats like the one you once held.
We'll have to.
And other seats upstate. But I think part of it is the Assembly and the Senate are not getting along, and the governor is paying the price for that. But I would encourage them, don't fall into the trap of trying to do gimmicky two-way agreements that wind up being shot at from both sides. So instead of seeing it as a gross failure, I'd say it's a warning sign. Keep both parties at the table until you can get three-way agreements.
Sure. So you don't see...
If it takes longer.
Right. And I think people saw through that this was a gimmick to try to placate certain voters and not really doing anything.
Right. But on the other side of the equation, the same umbrage that some people are taking to that are the way they're attacking President Obama for putting forward the... executive orders, which is not a two-way agreement, but executive orders on immigration. The sad thing is it's when the legislative process does not move us towards consensus.
Right.
And they get into what I would call bad habits of two-way agreements. But I think it was born of frustration and not malice.
And not getting things done. Like he tried to get some changes in criminal defense through and couldn't, and then did through executive fiat, whatever executive authority is making the attorney general giving him the powers to investigate when a civilian dies at the hands of of police.
Right, but as the Daily News editorial pointed out today, the DAs who are now opposing this, particularly DAs from some of the smaller upstate counties, they helped kill the chance for reform in the legislature, mm-hmm. and are now opposing this, but with some of the tragedies like the Garner case, there's a great deal of pressure and lack of confidence in the DA of Staten Island, who's now a Republican member of Congress, not indicting the not finding any crime, not just murder but manslaughter, for what was clearly a horrific tragedy in the Garner case.
Yeah, I think this was an issue where the governor wanted to see some changes by both houses and put forth proposals and didn't get them. So, in a sense, he felt he was forced to act.
Right, but I think he has clear legal authority to appoint special prosecutors.
Sure.
And if the DAs don't want the Attorney General to be the special prosecutor, then maybe they ought to come to the table to help create a system where there can be more confidence in these terrible tragedies involving the police and members of the community.
And what do you think about this kind of very public spat between the governor and Mayor de Blasio from New York City? Do you think people really care about their relationship?
No, I don't think people care, but I think it's unfortunate, and I think it's a terrible potential problem for the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is not helped when regional poison is in the air. Upstate is only 37 or 38% of registered voters, but just shy of 49% of the vote in the last gubernatorial election. Upstate outvotes its weight, and Democrats are hurt if upstaters think downstaters are not listening to them. So,
sure.
So I think Mayor de Blasio is not being sensitive to the fact that to win upstate, Democrats have to do either statewide or in races for key congressional, state, Senate, and assembly seats, need to do well with moderate voters. They, you know, it's not like you're running as a Democrat in Manhattan and you basically have to commit a heinous crime to lose. You need a lot of moderate support. On the other hand, Governor Cuomo should be more sensitive to the fact that he needs to have warmer relations with the liberal wing of his own party. And if this de Blasio Cuomo spat, just them fighting together, I don't think the public cares. But if it creates a long-term schism in the Democratic Party, where Democrats do not do well with moderate voters, and people like Cuomo in 2010, Schumer, Gillibrand, DiNapoli, Spitzer before his fall, Mrs. Clinton did very well with moderate voters.
Yep.
That's a long-term problem. So I think both would be wise to pull it together. I said this the other day. If Barack Obama were not a lame duck and worried about major issues like Iran and not concerned about political realities, but if the Democratic president would call both in, either literally or figuratively, to the White House and tell them to knock it off.
Well, he was in
the Democratic Party.
He was in the city over the weekend. It would have been a nice opportunity to get the two of them together.
But the precipitating incident was the mayor's rather harsh rhetoric towards the governor, and I would think in due course somehow, you know, they will come together. But it was but historically this pales in venom and vitriol with the way Rockefeller and Lindsay dealt with each other in the 60s, a Republican mayor and a Republican governor. So this hasn't nearly reached the level of venom that one did. So there's still hope they can come together, and they have a long relationship, and hopefully Democrats will bring them together.
Well,
around the state will say, look, this isn't helping anyone. Because if you look at that Siena poll, de Blasio sinks in public opinion outside New York City, whereas the governor's spat with de Blasio hurts him among some of de Blasio's base in New York City. And that really suits neither's long-term agenda.
Sure.
A mayor of New York who's unpopular in the suburbs and upstate, his or and someday her voice will not resonate in Albany as well. And a Democratic governor who's losing strength in the liberal side cuts into his and someday her base. So I'd argue for the political equivalent of marriage counseling, though I'm not volunteering to do it myself.
Yeah, I would not want to be in that room. So if the legislature is off, they're not in session, they don't come back officially in session until next January, but the governor has certain powers. He can continue to negotiate on issues and get bills drafted and worked on, and he can call a special session and put together an agenda if he comes up with some agreements. If you were advising him and this is something he wanted to pursue, what would you encourage him to hold a special session on and bring both sides back together that would help him show that he is leading the state in a positive direction?
Well, I would not bring back a special session unless there were agreements. The history of that is if
disaster.
The special sessions don't have agreements and are not productive, they're worse than not having special sessions. What I would do is what we said earlier, get out on that economic development agenda, build up some public support that those upstate economic development initiatives, both the large competitive grants, but also the regional economic development councils are producing good results and some thoughtful initiatives all around the state, particularly upstate. And that can build up your public support and then work diligently behind the scenes and see if you can craft and cobble together some agreements around either education, further economic development, the minimum wage, and perhaps some common sense reform of the SAFE Act, and have a productive special session. The other thing I'd suggest they look at is climate change. The public opinion on climate change is it's really moving in New York State. In the 2014 exit polls, 68% of New Yorkers felt climate change was a serious problem, and they broke for Cuomo over Astorino by 73-20%.
And that's something
that is significant.
Poll.
So I think if they could come up with some infrastructure-based initiatives relating to climate change and actually get three-way agreement, that would be both very smart and also prove very politically popular. Forgive my bad semantics.
Well, that was an issue the Siena poll didn't touch on, but maybe they will
but they have in the past,
and
there's real strong support for it.
Well, Bruce, I want to thank you for joining me on the Albany Report. This was a very fascinating and interesting conversation. I'm glad we got the technical hiccups out of the way. And this is your first Skyping experience, and I hope
yes,
it was
it
painless
other
for you.
Other than with my grandchildren, where I'm not in charge of the technological logistics, thank God.
But I appreciate your time.
Seriously, thank you for having me on. I enjoyed the discussion, and good luck to you and your family.
Thank you very much, Bruce. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Bruce Giuri. He's a political consultant. He works for Manatt, Phelps & Phillips in Albany, a law firm, and has worked for three governors and is often someone you find on Capitol Tonight and someone who weighs in on the political machinations in Albany. So we appreciate his time this morning.